for being here. Appreciate it. You had a choice. You could have done something else tonight when you heard I was coming. So I appreciate you being here. I don't know who that guy is. So thanks for giving me a chance. I appreciate it. We are in chapter 7 of this book. How many of you have read chapter 7? So many of you are honest. Thank you for saying no, you have not. Good, that's all right. We're going to dig through it, and hopefully by the time we're done, you're like, I don't need to read chapter 7. I got it down. So those of you that read it, you'll be some help tonight as we have some discussions. I want to share a story with you here at the beginning as we kick things off. I'm going to read a portion of it. It says, in June 1944, a young soldier surrendered to the American paratroopers in the Allied invasion of Normandy. And at first, his captors thought that he was Japanese, but in fact, he was Korean. And his name was Yang Kyung-jung. And here's a picture of him as I give the cue. And if anybody wants to correct my pronunciation of his name, go ahead. anybody? No? Okay, good. That's a tough one. I did the best that I could. But listen to who this young man really was. 1938, at the age of 18, Yang had been forcibly conscripted by the Japanese. He's been forced into the Japanese army. A year later, he was captured by the Soviet military and sent to a labor camp. That'd be 1939. 1942, he was drafted along with thousands of other prisoners in the Soviet forces. 1943, a year later, he was taken prisoner by the German army. And in 1944, now in German uniform, he was sent to the battle lines in France. He was eventually captured again after spending some time in a British prison camp. He went to the United States, where he said nothing of his past, settled down in Illinois, and died in 1992. So in 38, of age of 18, this Korean was taken and put in the Japanese army, captured by the Soviets a few years later, spent time in a labor camp, went to fight with other prisoners in the Soviet forces, and then was taken prisoner by the German forces, went to fight for the German forces, was then taken prisoner by the British forces, and eventually ended up in America, and he died in Illinois. So he was Yang from Illinois. It's a crazy story. I want to share this quote. I think this is a beautifully written quote, and I think it will kick us off into this chapter we're about to get into. In a war which killed over 60 million people, and stretched around the globe, this reluctant veteran of the Japanese, Soviet, and German armies had been comparatively fortunate. Yet Yang remains perhaps the most striking illustration of the helplessness of most ordinary mortals in the face of what appeared to be overwhelming historical forces. Yang was not in control. From 18 years old until he eventually ended up in America and was in peacetime, he was not in control. He had no power at all to do anything about these warring nations and what was taking place, a war that covered the world and killed 60 million people. And then you have this one Korean young man who is shifted from prison to prison to front line, and there's nothing he could do about it. And that's an outstanding illustration. But if we're honest, that is so often the experience of life, is it not? We think we're in control, perhaps. But if you've lived long enough, and some, even when you're young, you learn it young perhaps, depending on what your life's been like. It's not just an age thing. But especially if you've lived long enough, you've been pushed around and put places and things happen to you that you weren't prepared for, you didn't cause, you didn't do, you couldn't change. And if we're honest about our lives, it is a hard, hard road. There's beautiful, wonderful, grand, awesome things. And we're going to be talking about our relationship with God and all of that. But even from the announcements that Robin shared tonight, life overcomes us. It devastates. And it takes us in places we never planned or wanted to be or never saw ourselves going. And sometimes, like Yang, we feel like we're along for the ride and there's not much that we can do about it. And it gets even more complicated, I think, as Christians, because we still experience that part of life that is up in the air. We don't know what's going to happen, what's going to take place, but yet we believe in this God that has a plan, and we believe in where we're going. But sometimes, if I'm honest, that almost confuses life a little more sometimes. Because we're like, well, then where is God? Why is God not doing this? Why did this happen? How can I trust God in this situation or in this thing? So I don't know about you, but for me, sometimes I'm just trying to make sense of my life and God, it can get complicated. Sometimes it almost makes more sense if there wasn't a God. That's why all these things are happening. I don't know if you struggle with that. But I want us to dig into that a little tonight, and I hope that by the end of it, you will have some encouragement, some teaching, some direction in how to deal with life as it is and how to keep going. And we're particularly going to talk about the need for belief and what that looks like. So we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, and we're going to cover quite a few verses here to begin with. And as I read chapter 7, I thought that Hebrews chapter 12 really went along with it. The author, Kyle, he mentions a few verses at the beginning of Hebrews chapter 12, but I think all of it down to 13 goes right with this chapter. So I'm going to try to make some of those connections for us and give us some time to discuss. It says, therefore, and if you don't have your Bible, I have the on screen. Sorry if the font's too small. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and who are the witnesses? He just got done in chapter 11 describing what we call the hall of faith. It's all of these people of the past who had gone through death and danger and the hardship of life and stayed faithful and made it through. Those are the cloud of witnesses. Cloud of witnesses is everybody else that's been through life and it's been tough and it's been hard and they paid the price, and in particular here in this case, from their faith. So we're surrounded by all these other people that have been through the hardness of life. So let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And this is where Kyle starts out in chapter 7. Life is hard as it is. What will sin do to our lives that are already hard? Make it even harder. Trip us up even more. And this weight that he's talking about, these things that are not of God, these things are going to make life harder than it already is. And it's hard enough already. And so the writer of Hebrews is saying, as we run this race, it's going to be hard enough anyways. Don't run the marathon with a bunch of extra weights on your back or with your shoes tied together. It's unnecessary. So these sins that we struggle with, they're making life harder. So throw those things off. Get out of this sin that entangles. And we can think about what those sins are. And their greed. And their lust. And their adultery. And their lying. And their addictions. And their all kinds of sins that we could list. And we know how these things, even if we feel like they're soothing us for a short period of time or giving us some comfort for a short period of time, all of these things trip us up, weigh us down. make life even harder than it already is. So throw these things off that you get tangled up in, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. He says, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Now, this race is this life of faith, but it's life. And in this context, Paul is talking to us that have a faith in God, a faith in Jesus. So let's run through this life like Jesus did. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And he says, so run it with perseverance. Let me ask you this, and this isn't rhetorical. I want you to answer. What are some other ways that we, instead of running the race with perseverance, what are some other things that we run the race with? And I'll give you an example, kind of show who I'm talking about. Some of us are running the race with anger. Running the course marked out for us with just carrying a bunch of anger. What are some other things besides perseverance, some other ways that we run this life?
Lack of self-control.
Okay. Yeah. Lack of self-control. Good. There's a lot, so let's name a few.
Guilt.
Nope. Go ahead.
Guilt.
Guilt, and that's talked about in this chapter a lot too. And we'll mention that some. Good. What else?
Denial.
Great.
Resentment.
Fear. Bitterness. All those things. And so it's a stopping point for us to think about individually within ourselves. Am I running this race, this life, and then this race also of faith marked out by Christ, and we'll look at that. But am I running this thing with perseverance? Or am I running it with anger? Or am I running it with bitterness or fear or guilt? What am I running with? And I think the writer here is telling us, if you're running with anything besides this attitude of perseverance, you're running with some stuff you don't need to run with. So that guilt or that bitterness or that anger or that denial, those things are not going to help you run this race, this course marked out for you. Let those go. How? We'll continue in this. So he says, let's run this race marked out for us with perseverance. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We're running this race with perseverance, and we fix our eyes on Jesus. What are other things that we, besides Jesus, fix our eyes on? Let's list a few.
Time.
Okay. How so?
Seems like you're always in a hurry to go here and go there.
Okay.
Get done.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Work.
Yeah.
Self.
Family. Okay. That can be tough. Anything else you see yourself fixing your eyes on? Money, I don't know. Success, fame, I don't know. Most of us aren't really trying to be famous, but you understand what I'm saying.
Occupation,
return. Okay, yeah, yeah. Don't fix your eyes on those things. You're not going to get through this life and this race without perseverance and without keeping your eyes on Jesus, who is the author and perfecter of this faith. What this means is Jesus ran this race already, and he showed us all exactly how to run this race. And what that doesn't mean, and we'll continue to talk about this, what that doesn't mean is if you run the race like Jesus, everything's going to be great. Because let's stop there for a minute before we move on. What was Jesus's life like here on earth? What are some things that Jesus experienced? How would you describe his life experience on this terrestrial ball, as the old song says?
Rejection.
Okay. What else did he experience?
Same things we experience.
Yeah. Everything, like pain, suffering, loss, heartache. He was poor. What did he say about himself? The Son of Man doesn't have what? A home or a place to lay his head. Jesus, and we're going to see this, try not to get ahead of myself too much. Jesus had an extremely hard life. If we look at it through the lens of what we think makes our life good. He didn't have money. He didn't have home or nice clothes or a great job or security or a 401k or retirement. He, you know, didn't have a great married relationship with lots of children. All the things that we may point to and think that's the perfect life. Jesus had none of those, even to the point of rejection, spit upon, and killed. And it goes on to say that in your struggle, it says, he scorned its shame and set, or excuse me, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. Consider what he endured. Consider the opposition that Jesus faced. So run this race with perseverance. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Understand that Jesus didn't have an easy time of things on this earth either. And it's okay that we don't. I think sometimes as Christians, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Like, well, if I follow Jesus and if I'm good and I stay away from sin, then my life should be pretty good. No. God never promised your life here on earth was going to be nice and simple and neat. Our hopes for later. He shows us the way to live our lives. He shows us ways to make decisions. But Jesus said, in this world, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have a lot of trouble. And we do. And there's various reasons for that that we'll look at. But fix your eyes on Jesus, who showed us how to run this race, even though he was in the mix of a lot of trouble and heartache and pain, just like us. The writer goes on in verse 4 to say, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And since he's like, look, you're still alive. I mean, Jesus struggled in this life all the way to the point of being murdered and killed. And we know then he resurrected and showed this power over death. And again, that's our ultimate hope. But who this writer is speaking to is like, you guys are still alive. So you haven't even experienced what Jesus experienced in this life. Your life's hard. There's hardships and they're coming. But you haven't quite got that far yet. So while you're still alive, while you still have breath in your lungs, no matter how hard it is to breathe, how big of a weight you feel upon you from the burdens and worries of life, no matter any of that, perseverance, fix your eyes on Jesus. He endured the same things even to the point of death. He said, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as sons. The Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as sons. As children of God, sons and daughters of God, trying to be faithful, to live in this way we saw Jesus live. What are signs of success in that? What are signs, according to this, of if you are running that race with perseverance, you are following Christ, what are signs of that in our lives? Okay, money? Okay, humbleness. Here he says punishment and discipline. Punishment and discipline is a sign of being a son and a daughter. We think that success in the Christian life would bring us that new job opportunity or that raise or get into that school I want to get into or that marriage or that spouse or whatever it is that I really want. Those things that we picture as what would make life great if I could have that, we think sometimes and teach sometimes a prosperity kind of mindset that if we follow God right, then we'll get those things. And I think that's really not the formula. God blesses us. God loves us. God cares for us. But if you are a son and daughter of God, you are going to go through discipline. And you are going to go through punishment. You are not going to turn everything that you touch to gold. You are not, God is not concerned about you having all of those things that you want that you think will make life great. Now, on one hand, that's not the message that we preach to visitors to try to get them to join the church. But after hearing that for so many years, and then I've reached the point where I've lived long enough, I do have some experiences. Some of you are like, you don't know what you're talking about. And then I look at the 20-year-old, you don't know what you're talking about. But that actually comforts me. That actually comforts me. Because I've had a hard road sometimes. Harder than anybody else? No. I had some hard stuff. And you've had some hard stuff. And this is telling me that's going to be part of life as a Christian. Now, we're going to continue in this. There's a couple different ways to look at this. He's looking at one at this beginning, and then he's going to look at another. So I heard this quote. It's from a song a long time ago. Not too long ago, but the writer said, did I get shot? It's not up there. He said, did I get shot or shoot myself? And what he meant by that was, in this whole melee of junk, I came out wounded, and I don't know if I did it to myself or if somebody did it to me. And I think that's a very descriptive line of life. Because when we look at the hardships in our lives, we wrestle with, did I do this to myself or did someone else do this to me? And it's usually never black and white, but I think if we look at the mistakes that we would point to, regrets possibly, or whatever it is, those types of things, I think we can look back and we can see, yeah, I did that, and the consequences were really because of what I did. And then there's other things that I didn't do that. I didn't do something wrong to get that sickness. That sickness just came. Or my marriage fell apart, and I can look back and kind of see maybe what I had, my responsibility in that. And sometimes we can point to the things that we think we did, and sometimes we don't know. And I think here in this part, he's going to talk about hardships that I think happened to us in the second part. But in this first part, I think he's talking to us about the sins that we commit. And so let's deal with that for just a moment. Let's deal with this fact that we have all, at times, got tangled up in sin. Kyle, at the beginning, kind of describes it as walking into a spider web. You didn't see it was there. It gets all over you. You're trying to get it off of you. And trying to pat a spider off of you for there. And you look really silly. And that's how sin works. Sometimes we walk right into something we didn't see coming. And it can work in baby steps. And we finally get to the middle of the mess. So we have to be honest about the mistakes we've made. Because some of the mistakes we've made have done some damage to our lives and the lives of people around us. And that's true. And it's healthy for us to admit that and to know those things. What did Jesus do about that? What did Jesus do about those ways you've screwed up royally in your past? Or maybe even the way you're screwing up royally right now. What did Jesus do about that?
Repented.
He redid it?
Repented.
Okay. What else? What did Jesus do about your screw ups? He took them.
He forgave you.
Yeah.
And he absorbed the punishment.
Yeah. So, your sin's not the end of the story. Yeah, you did it. And you messed up. And it caused you some problems. And it maybe hurt a lot of people. And while sin is sin, sometimes we're like, well, that didn't do too much. That did a lot. However you want to grade it, we've all sinned, we've all messed up, and we've all seen the damage it's done. And you can go back through your whole life and regret these things that you've made or the things that you've decided, and if only I would have done this, then life would have been like that. You don't know any of that. But Jesus took that sin upon himself, died, and here's the part that matters even the most, was resurrected as the first fruits of a new beginning. Without that resurrection, Paul says, what are we even doing here in church? But what he's saying is, you have lived this life, and there are things that you have done, you shouldn't have done, that have caused problems for yourself and other people. But that's not the end of the story. Those things can be forgiven, redeemed, and our hope is that God will at some point make everything the way it should be again. And so throw off that guilt. Guilt tells us something we did wrong, and that's good. It's good to feel guilt at times in the sense of I'm convicted about what I did. Shame tries to tell you, and Kyle says this in the chapter, shame tries to tell you that's who you are. That's not who you are. You're not the adulterer. You're not the thief. You're not the liar. You're a son or a daughter of God, and you did those things. But God redeems those things. And our hope is that we're going to live in that reality fully. But right now, don't give up. Don't carry the weight of guilt. Don't carry this weight of your sin. Run with perseverance. Keep your eyes on Jesus, the one that came to untangle us from these webs of sin that we've created. And move forward. Move forward. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so I'm not trying to tell you how to deal with every wrong thing you've done in your life and how you need to work that out or any of those kinds of things. But generally speaking, deal with it and then move forward. Know that you are forgiven, even in the middle of the consequences you still suffer. So I think that's the first half where he is saying, yeah, you know, this life is hard. Run it with perseverance. And sometimes it's hard because of what you've done. But don't be discouraged by God's discipline or punishment. Because when he disciplines you or punishes you because of things that you've done, he's treating you as a son or daughter. And he's going to go into that more. And we'll talk about that in a second. I think he kind of moves into away from just sins you've done and messed up and God punishing you, training you into hardships that come our way. So that's the first part. In this world, you will have trouble. Sometimes you bring it on yourself. But don't lose heart because God punishes you or disciplines you or trains you because you are a son or daughter. That's what parents do, even earthly parents. the best that they can. All right, let's move on to the second half, and there's some great things I want to get into with you in this. He says, endure hardships as discipline. God is treating you as sons. Now again, here's kind of where I feel like there's a little distinction. The first part, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline or lose heart when he rebukes you. And he's thinking, he's saying, don't give up when you've messed up and God is training you or teaching you a lesson. With that, endure hardships as discipline. And I think what he's saying in there and is going to continue to say is there are things in life that maybe you didn't do aren't a result of just your messing up. So here's how you deal with those. Here's how you deal with sins that you've committed and God is training and teaching you. Here's how you deal with things that have come your way that maybe you didn't do. We all have sin and guilt, and we know in the grand scheme of things we're all fallen. But there are. I didn't do anything to get that disease. Stuff like that happens. So when that happens, when a hardship comes your way, here's how you endure it. He says, if you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best. And some of us had fathers that did that. Some of us haven't had fathers. And some of us had fathers that disciplined us in the most unhealthy way. It's going to be a hard verse for you to relate to depending on how you grew up and what your situation is. But ideally, we have moms and dads that do their best to raise us and to teach us, to help us avoid problems in lives and to be a good person. And if you have parents of faith, they teach you to live like Jesus. So humans do this. Verse 11, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. First thing here, he says, endure hardships as discipline. As we've been discussing, what are ways that we typically respond to hardship? When I'm saying that, I mean kind of the wrong ways. What are some of the other ways that we respond to hardship in our lives? What have you experienced? Okay. Sure. Yeah. I mean, can't God do anything? Well, then do something about this. As much as we don't talk about that, well, I think all of us wrestle with that on some level. God, why? You know, I've been praying and praying and praying, and why? And I know that you have the plan and all that kind of stuff, but why? How else do we respond to hardship in our lives? Blame it on others. Okay. Blame it on others. Sometimes it's our fault. Sometimes it's not our fault. Sometimes we're blaming on people. It's not their fault either. How else?
Throw up your hands and give up.
Okay. Give up.
Look for a distraction.
All right. Look for a distraction. Some way to escape. Any number of addictions you can find in this world if you're looking for a distraction. A lot of different ways to give up.
Some people are really sorry for themselves.
Okay.
Depression.
Yeah. And you can fall into self-pity sometimes. There's lots of ways. But he's telling us, don't lose heart when God disciplines you, because that means God's working on you. And he's not just turning his back to you and the things you've messed up. He's in there doing something about it. And if hardship comes, something comes your way, you lose that job and you really didn't deserve it, or you got laid off because, you know, someone else was greedy and ruined everything, and now they had to cut jobs back, or whatever it was. You didn't do it. You just got fired one day, and it wasn't your fault, truly. Here's how you endure that. Endure that as if you're being trained. Our parents hopefully trained us. And so endure that as if you're being trained to be made stronger, to be able to continue through life. All of you can relate to when you're little and you spilt something, you cried about it, and now you're dealing with much bigger, harder things, and it's a world of difference. There are things in your life right now you're like, I couldn't have dealt with that when I was 15 or 20 or 30 or 40, but where you're at now with all of your experience, you're able to deal with it a little better. Have you ever, like me, I don't know, have you ever felt like, all right, I think God's taking me through this to teach me something. And I'm like, now, when am I going to use it? And then it's like, oh, wait, he's taking me through something else to teach me something else. Like, when am I going to be done being taught these things so then I can do something? Like, when's the peace period where I'm like, I've learned all these things, let me use them now? When is that? I don't know when that is. I don't know if you reach that in this life. But endure this confusing mess. Because some of us, that's where we get stuck in the confusion, right? Why is this happening? Where did it come from? Why isn't God stopping this or changing this or doing this? And why and what? And we wrestle it to death in our minds. It's like, look at it. Look at this hardship like this. God is doing some hard, painful work on you. Because you're a son or you're a daughter. And it's not fun and it doesn't feel good. And like Jonah, you're going to want to run the opposite direction. But get your mind in that spot that what you're going through right now is it's discipline, it's training. God is doing something in you. And he says, what does he say there at the end? Those who have endured this training, what comes from them? A harvest of what? Righteousness. Yeah. A harvest of peace and righteousness. Can any of you attest to that? You've been through some things and you've seen how blessed by God, you came out on the other side, and it did something deep in your soul and mind and changed you in a way that made you more like Christ. I think of Bob, you can. And even if you are too humble to look at yourself, I bet there's people around you, you know. But there's a risk in that. We're going to talk about that here in a minute, and we're going to dig into that and wrap up with it. There's a risk. When you discipline a child, and let's think teenager here, because that's complicated. When you discipline, your teenager, no matter how great they are, what is the risk you take by disciplining them? Them running away?
Driving them away.
Driving them away. Yeah. Yeah, driving them away.
They're bigger than you risk losing
harm. Yes, and that's funny, but sadly true. Sadly true. But yeah, I think there's a lot of things, but I think that is at the heart of it. You risk in that discipline them rejecting it completely and going the opposite direction. And it's complicated because we're not perfect at discipline. And we try our best, but man, it's messy. And there's times I find my daughter's 15, my son's 10. We've done youth ministry for a long time. And there's times I'm like, I really don't know what I'm doing. But this is the best decision, I think. I don't know why I said you can't do that, but here's, that's... It, My daughter loves to argue with me, and the sad part is I was the same way. But you run a risk in that discipline. Now, if you don't discipline, the risk is, well, they're just going to do whatever they want, whenever they want, and that we're afraid of that. But there's also the side of, will they rebel? Will they not care? Will they just reject it? All right. Let's take these last two verses in and bring this all together with us. Kyle, in this chapter, he talks about us getting tangled up in sin, the sins that we ourselves get into. And he talks about how Jesus died for those, can redeem us of those. But in that, when we're being disciplined or being trained, sometimes we choose to be apathetic, or sometimes we choose just to hold on to the guilt. Instead of running this race with perseverance, we kind of just give up and we lay down and we hold on to these things that we've always held on to, and then it can even move to shame. But Christ can untangle you from your sin, its consequences, shame, guilt. Sometimes we're just apathetic. The writer here says, don't give up. And Kyle, in this chapter, ends with the sin of unbelief. That's what I want us to spend those last few minutes on. What is the sin of unbelief? Let's read these verses and then dig into it. Hey, Courtney. So, Courtney was in my youth group in Maryland. Sorry, that was rude of me just to interject, but she caught me off guard. All right. Verse 12. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet, so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. Therefore, because of this discipline that comes your way, whether it's from your own mess ups, or it's just the hardships of life that have found their way upon you in a fallen world, endure these things as hardship. Endure these hardships, as discipline and training. And know that God loves you. It is this discipline and training is not the absence of God's love. It's the presence of God's love in some ways. It's a sign of true sonship and daughtership. So get your mind right in the fact that God is there and loves you, and this discipline is a sign of his presence in your life. That's hard to believe. That's hard to believe. But do that. And when hardships come your way, endure them the same kind of way as if you're being trained. It'll produce this peace and righteous harvest within you. So because of this discipline in its various forms, and the suffering of life in its various forms, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet, so that the lame may not be disabled, but healed. God takes a risk with you when he disciplines you. And that risk is you will either be healed or you will be disabled. You could go either way in your response to this discipline, to these hardships, to these, to this pain that you suffer. You could go either way. You can be healed or you can be disabled. Let's talk about that for just a moment. When someone is going through hardship, when you yourself have done it, what's it look like for someone to come out the other side disabled? What's it look like to come out the other side disabled? Not lame, not, you know, having a little limp or war scar. What's it look like, you think, someone comes out the other side disabled?
Not certain I know where you're going and all that, but I love working puzzles.
Okay.
And I had all these laid out, gluing them together, going to make pictures out of them and everything. And one night this some reason or other, I upset the apple cart.
Okay.
Puzzles went every which way. Well, maybe the best thing to do right now is just put them all back in the box and start all over.
Okay.
My computer's all haywire. I've collected all the wires I can, put them in a box, in a drawer, and got the Geek Squad lined up to come over to help me out with it.
Mm-hmm.
I really think all they need to do is bring in totally new equipment.
Yeah.
But it's just little things like that.
Okay. I mean, what's the other way you could have reacted?
Chucked it on.
Yeah. What's it look like to come out the other side of this hardship, this discipline and pain? What's it look like to come out not healed, but disabled? What do you think that looks like?
Bitterness and anger.
Okay.
Frustration.
Yeah.
Mad at the world.
You ever been there? Know someone that's there? Maybe you're there. That bitterness, that anger, that frustration, that staying in a constant state of confusion, you're crippled. You can't do anything. It makes everything even worse than it already was. You are powerless in that spot. So when God disciplines you, He takes a risk that you may get bitter and angry, and you might run away, and you might give up and do what you want to do. But if we believe that God is involved in our lives, is working, is the one disciplining and training, if we believe that God is God, then you can accept that sickness or that hardship or whatever it is. You may not be able to explain it all away, and you're not going to take all your emotions and just chuck them and be done with it. You're still going to cry and hurt and have pain. But you will stay somewhat stable and come out the other side healed if you believe that God is there and working for your good in it. So you say, why did I get this sickness? I don't know. But endure it like God's training you. Because if you don't endure it like God's training you, and you endure it some other way with anger or bitterness, you're going to come out the other side disabled. But if you endure it as training, as hard as it is, as miserable as it is, then God can do great things in that and heal you. And I don't mean heal you like you're not going to have cancer anymore. God can do that. That's not what this isn't about. Do these things so then your life can be perfect. This is how you get through life as we know it. And you can either run as a lame person and become disabled, or you can make level paths for your feet. Run the race marked out for you like Jesus has shown us. Endure these hardships as discipline. And persevere. Or there's the other side of that. What were you going to say, sir? Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the discernment and wisdom that we as parents try to obtain,
mm-hmm.
to know when to step in when our children are going through difficult times or any hardship.
Mm-hmm.
And a hardship to an 18-month-old is different than a hardship for an 18-year-old.
Correct.
Solve the problems. The problem is we have to have wisdom to know when to help.
Right.
To help and when not to help.
Yeah.
To allow them to struggle, to get through a hardship.
Yeah.
Even though we know what they're facing is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Based on our experience, based
sure.
on what we know.
Mm-hmm.
But to them, it's a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
We know they're going to be okay, and we have to decide when to step in.
Sure.
Now, if we can do that and have those thoughts, how much more does God know it's going to be okay, and
mm-hmm.
the end result's going to be?
Sure.
And he's going to know exactly when to step in and when not to.
And when not
to. Not step in and remove yeah. everything.
Right.
And make it so we're not going to struggle, because he knows that's not helpful for us.
Yeah. There's a time I went through something, and I remember praying to God to fix it and change it. And I knew in my heart as I was praying, I knew if God gave this to me and fixed this problem, I'd pretty much be a spoiled brat. I'm like, no, Michael, you have to learn to live in this, and there's some lessons here for you, and you got to stay in this place of pressure because there's some stuff that needs to change. And if I just change this, then you're just going to still be a little brat. And through that and many other things, I've hit some times in my life that have been hard, and I've hit those and thought, okay, I think I've learned a little bit. And I feel like, you know, if I can come out the other side of this, I did better this time than I did the last time. And I'm not perfect, but I actually think I learned something. And so I want to encourage you with that tonight, wherever you're at, in your response to this discipline, to this hardship of life. You're at a place of risk, and I encourage you to follow this path of Jesus that has been made level. And it leads for all of us who are lame into a place of healing. And if you go any other direction, that bad hip is going to turn into you won't be able to walk at all. And then you're going to be crippled. And so I hope that at the end of the day, I think this sin of unbelief that Kyle is talking about, I think it's failing to believe that God is there, loves you, is disciplining you, is training you. And you really don't believe that God's involved in helping and doing that. You really don't believe that God's aware or cares. And I think that unbelief just sends us tossed in the waves. And he's calling us to truly believe that God knows you, cares for you, is aware of it, has redeemed you, but is disciplining you. And you're going to be in that hard spot for a while. But don't be confused about where God is in that. Anybody have any comments or anything you want to add to that before we close? There you go. Don't give up. We should have just read the title. Yeah.
With working all these puzzles, the best thing for me might do to put it all back together in the box, or just throw it in the box, start it all over.
Yeah.
And so forth there.
Yeah.
Financial situation that's all goofed up. The bank won't even cash the checks for me or doing to pay any bills.
Yeah.
When I get my disability check, I think around the 27th, it should all be straightened out and so forth there.
Yeah.
Start life
over. Yeah. But you got to make it there. Got to make it there. And that's where faith and belief can help you get there and do that. And we've all faced those kinds of things in various, you're like, oh man, I'm 50 and I lost my job and I got to reinvent my career. How am I going to do that? There's lots of examples. Thank you guys. Let me say a quick prayer and then we'll end. God, thank you for your love for us, and thank you for your son. We thank you that he, although God, was a human like us and showed us how to live in this world with the pain and suffering and problems that we face. Help us, Father, to have faith that you are here and with us and aware that you care for us. Help us to, through your Spirit, have the strength to stand up under the pressures of these things and to not give up. And Father, I pray that for those that are here right now, that you as your word says, produce a harvest of peace and righteousness within their hearts out of what they're facing right now. It's in Christ's name. Amen.